It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast from Cut 4. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I am joined as always by Gemma Kaneko.
What's up?
And by the former Los Angeles bureau chief of Cut 4. He's since been supplanted by Adrian Garrow. I'm talking, of course, about Michael Clare. Welcome back to the Cut Forecast, Mr. Clare.
Thank you so much. I hope I can have a strong enough showing today that I'll inspire you to give me my belt that says LA bureau chief back. I don't know if we need a cage match or something with Adrian, but I'm ready to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out. We'll see how it goes. I'm kind of incredulous that you'll be able to dethrone him. He did a pretty good job.
He did. He was great.
And he's very strong, so I'd lose to him in a wrestling match. So there's really no way I can come out on top.
Is Fair. He very strong? It's weird, but okay.
Do you guys just wrestle all the time?
Do you guys have LA meetups and just fight?
Yeah. That's the thing. You'll notice if we're both, sort of working at the same time, we don't get as much done because we're usually arm wrestling the whole time. Just, greased up, wearing headbands.
No.
Why do we invite you onto this podcast? It is just a mess every time you're here. We have a lot to get to today that is not related to wrestling in any capacity.
Thank goodness.
We'll discuss the World Baseball Classic. That's good. Hey, Gemma.
It is good.
Do you have any thoughts on the World Baseball Classic generally?
It's been so exciting. I'm very sleep deprived because I've been staying up to watch some of these games.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's totally worth it. It's definitely worth it to be awake to see things like the Adam Jones catch, which was so exciting.
That's right. Gemma Kaneko, quote, "It's worth it to be awake." We also are going to discuss...
Sometimes it's not, okay?
We're also going to discuss March Madness. We are in the midst of March Madness. I've caught a case of March Madness.
Should I sit somewhere else?
You should probably go to the other studio. Oh, and then Claire is going to explain to us. He's going to Claire-splain to us why the Athletics wear green. But before we get to all of that, we're taping this on a Tuesday. I don't know what day it is. Feels like a Tuesday. It's a Tuesday. David Ross was on Dancing with the Stars last night. He made his debut, and he did a lot better than I think any of us thought he was going to do. His partner is named Lindsay Arnold, and the two of them had a Go Cubs Go dance. It was on a baseball diamond-themed floor. Mm-hmm. He scored a 28 out of 40, which was really good, apparently. I don't know the competitive ballroom
the
dance
The highest
world.
Score of the evening, apparently.
It was the highest score of the evening. I guess, do you guys think that he's going to go all the way? We've talked a little bit about this before, but now that we've actually been confronted with dancing David Ross, is that like, Claire, I guess I'll start with you. Do you think that he has the opportunity to win it all?
Listen, David Ross has two World Series championships. He helped end a insane 108-year drought with the Cubs. So him winning the Dancing with the Stars title, if he wants it, it's his. He might, though, decide, I'm not saying he's going to give up, but I'm saying maybe one week he'll see the narrative. He'll go, Todd Banzemir over there, he really wants this. I'll give it to him. Because when you're David Ross and you get whatever you want, at some point you're like, this isn't my top priority. That's my thinking there. I also
Who else do you think is on this show?
I couldn't remember anybody on the show, so I don't know. Todd Banzemir over there. I took a shot. It was a 1 out of 8 billion chance. Maybe he's on it. I can't remember.
Claire, why don't you without googling it, tell us four other members of the cast of Dancing with the Stars.
All right, real guesses.
Four other members of Dancing with the Stars. Let's see. Bill Plunkett, Jeremy Haslin, Anthony Bourdain Jr., and last one, Steve Martin Sr.
Steve Martin Sr.? Is Steve Martin not Steve Martin Sr.?
He is, right? He just means Steve Martin. Weird that you picked no young women, even though Simone Biles is on the show, and she's Simone Biles, and she doesn't lose anything, so...
Yeah, here are the stars. Simone Biles, who is obviously the Olympic gymnast,
yes.
Who has an advantage because Olympians and figure skaters always win this. Bonner Bolton, who is apparently a model and bull rider.
That is the fake. That name is faker than whatever Claire said at the beginning of this.
There's Charo. Remember Charo?
Oh my god, how does Charo not win?
Charo's on the show. Erica Jane, who is a singer and reality television star, which is cryptic. Rashad Jennings, NFL running back. Chris Kattan, actor and comedian.
That's where he is now, huh?
That's where he is now. Nancy Kerrigan.
Did he do Mango?
I didn't watch the episode, but I think that at some point he will do a Mango-themed dance.
Probably. I mean, right. If the first thing that David Ross did was a Cubs-themed dance, this question I have is he going to only do Cubs-themed dances? Because, I mean, there are enough baseball songs that conceivably he could do only baseball-themed dances for the rest of the show. But how fast does that shtick get old? Like, when you said All the Way, I thought you were proposing that his next dance was going to be to the Eddie Vedder song All the Way.
It's possible.
No. His next one's going to be Old Man River, obviously.
Oh, wow. That's a little harsh.
He goes by Grandpa, okay? It's not me that
Isn't
came
his
up
team
with
called
monster.
Lady and the Gramp?
Yeah, he does have a hashtag, which is hashtag Lady and the Gramp, which if you want to tweet your support of David Ross, which you can also vote. They believe in democracy on Dancing with the Stars, so please go and vote for David Ross. Just to finish the point, Nancy Kerrigan, figure skater, Normani Cordell, who is a singer, Corday, apologies, Heather Morris, who is also an actor, David Ross, Mr. T, who doesn't love Mr. T?
Everyone loves Mr. T.
And some bachelor named Dick, the bachelor.
His name is his Nick. Name is his, name Dick. Is, his name is Nick.
No, Dick. His name is Dick.
Okay.
But no, I agree. There's a whole universe of baseball-themed songs that David Ross could dance, that I hope he would dance to. Take Me Out to the Ball Game would be fun.
Yeah.
I don't know what else.
I mean, they could...
Put me in coach.
Yes.
No. Definitely, yeah. I reject that. Please do not do that. He could bring back the Freshest Man on Earth song from the 1880s, which would probably, you know, enable him to do some old timey stepping.
Is that really the competitive ballroom dance scene?
I mean, it's historically accurate of the time of ballrooms.
Is this a thing? Are the people on? Because like all the dancers on the show.
Uh huh.
Is this like a thing that they learn how to do? Like, did they go to college for this?
I don't know that there's a ballroom dance college major.
I don't know. Claire, do you know? Is this like a thing that people do?
Well,
I think it's a hobby.
There were definitely dance majors at Emerson. Like, I don't know if they specialize in ballroom.
I don't think that there's like a vocational school that's just so that you can be a dancer on So You Think You Can Dance.
Well, so, okay, but see, here's the thing. There were dance majors at my college, too, but there was a lot of, like, rolling around on the ground and just sort of, like, jumping from one side of the stage to the other. Not to denigrate the art of dance, but it was different than, like, ballroom dance.
Well, usually when you take dance, you take multiple kinds of dance, and, like, you guys don't need to know anything about my life, but I'll tell you anyway. I swing dance. Like, I do go swing dancing a lot. And that is, like, steps. But if you learn other dance, it's not hard to pick these things up. And to say you really like the scene, then you get into it.
And then you just eventually wind up on Dancing with the Stars.
I have no idea how that happens for people, because I'm not a very good dancer, so...
So what we're saying is we need to step in, and we can use the branding of Dancing with the Stars to come out with a specialized course in a for-profit college.
Yes, that is what we're saying. Dancing with the Stars University.
I think what we're saying
And their baseball team could be coached by David Ross. That's
there
where
we
have landed. Let's move on. Enough about Dancing with the Stars.
For
I don't want to talk about it anymore until next week when David Ross continues to win.
David Ross, not a bad dancer, actually.
He turns out he's actually pretty good. But let's go back to the WBC. The final of the WBC. Puerto Rico is in and is down to two teams for the other slot. The United States of America and Japan. Gemma, do you have thoughts?
I'm very conflicted about this.
Why is that?
I have loved watching Team USA. It's been so fun. And also, I think a rule I have learned is that if you decide to play in the WBC, I will like you 10 times more. Almost in almost every circumstance. Maybe not all circumstances, but almost every circumstance, that's true.
Yeah.
Like, I already liked Adam Jones, but now I'm obsessed with Adam Jones. I mean, we talk about him in this podcast all the time, so it's probably not that surprising to anyone.
He's definitely like Mount Rushmore Cup 4 player.
Yeah, yes. But now I think Andrew Miller is kind of a cool person beyond just being like a good baseball player, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm like, I like you. I genuinely like you. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of fun watching Team USA. There's been a lot of really thrilling moments, but I love Japan too. They're so crisp.
Do you?
And there's yes I do. And they're so fun. But truly, it doesn't really matter to me which team gets the other slot because I'm obsessed with Puerto Rico.
Wow, this is hard for you.
I'm gonna cheer for Puerto Rico. I don't care who gets the other slot. I will be cheering for Puerto Rico. I have had so much fun watching these other teams, but Puerto Rico is by far the most emotionally demonstrative. They are such a team together. It's adorable. Their infield should be illegal. Like, it's just amazing. I love everything about that team, and I will be cheering for them in the final.
Claire, do you have a pick of Puerto Rico, the United States, or Japan?
So, I mean, listen. I'm going tonight, and I'm very excited, not only to watch the game, but also for all the, like, souvenirs I'm just going to, like, fill a giant sack with to bring home. But I think it's going to be Japan. I mean, listen, I love Tanner Roark. I love thinking about Tanner Roark, but that is a all-star Japanese lineup that is very scary to go up against. So As an American, I love rooting for the national team in any sport. You know, come Olympic time, all of a sudden I'm a huge Team USA, like, handball fan, a sport I haven't thought about any other time of the year. So I'm obviously cheering for Team USA, but I think we're going to see Puerto Rico versus Japan. And, yeah, Japan's won it twice. Puerto Rico, as Gemma said, is so much fun. The hair. I mean, multiple people have bleached facial hair. Carlos Delgado on the bench has a bleached goatee. Javier Baez is simply like, you know, sometimes in the playoffs, like MLBT offers the like multiple camera angles you can kind of watch from. I want just the Javier Baez camera that literally watches nobody but him at any time.
They should do more of that.
I would be into that. Yeah, especially because Javi Baez is, we all know, so dynamic and fun to watch.
Unrelated to WBC, what, like, are the four players you would like solo cameras on while they play baseball? Claire, keep it G-rated.
Just in the WBC or any four players?
Any four players in Major League Baseball.
Oh, man. That's...
It's like Machado.
Yeah, I'm thinking all shortstops, like Correa.
Yeah, Correa would be good.
Yeah.
Arenado would be fun.
Arenado would be really fun.
I like third baseman, clearly.
Yeah. Man, you guys are way off. Adrian Beltre.
Oh, that's good.
Joey Votto.
That's good, too.
Javier Baez. And the last one, I want someone in the bullpen. Someone who likes to, like, get a little weird during the game. So maybe
Fernando Rodney.
How could I
Fernando
forget?
Rodney, that's
He's, like,
that's
taking naps, walking around in trees.
How
like,
can I forget my other
things?
One? Starling Castro. You don't know what he's going to be doing on any 5 minutes when you look at him. He could be halfway to the outfield in... Oh, okay. We need to make this happen.
We really do need to make this happen.
I'm rooting for America.
Yeah,
what kind
I know.
Of question
I mean,
is that?
I know. It's like before I was like, oh, Buster Posey's great, but like whatever. But now I'm like a real Buster
Posey
fan.
And like they're fun, and we don't win this tournament.
Yeah.
And I would like to win this tournament.
We don't even get this far.
I know. Yeah. Like I also this is the first year to me that the WBC has kind of like transcended and become a real thing that people are talking about in sports. And it would be very great for the United States to win that. I think we need it, personally.
Okay, but Puerto Rico, part of the U.S. So if Puerto Rico
wins, sort of.
It's still a win for the
it's
U.S.
It's sort of a win
a
for the U.S.
More for Puerto Rico, but Puerto Rico is
you know
not
it's a win
non-US.
For?
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Exactly. and as you know, I am the world's biggest booster for Lin-Manuel Miranda, not named Miranda. But before we go on, I want to take a minute because there is, if we're an MLB.com podcast, I don't know if you know this, but if you click on the little MLB.com button on iTunes, you'll see a whole list of MLB.com podcasts. Gemma's making a face right now. She's so excited. But There are, you should go listen to all of them and subscribe to all of them. But right now I just want to talk about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. The Pipeline podcast is great. The draft gurus, Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, they join Tim McMaster every week to talk about what's going on in the world of MLB's future stars. It's a great way to learn more about baseball's next generation, all the prospects and the talent on and off the field before they hit the majors. So go to MLB Pipeline in iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, type in MLB Pipeline, click that big button that says subscribe. It's a really good show. You know what else is a really good show?
What?
This podcast.
I thought that's what you were going to say, but I was like, I wonder.
That is what I'm going to say. And one of the hosts of this podcast, Gemma Kaneko, put together a collaboration with the wonderful beat reporters of MLB.com for all of our clubs and spoke to some of the players about their March Madness strategy. That's right. It's bracket season. Now, my first question is, of all of the members of Cut 4, who has the most accurate bracket right now?
Is it you?
I think it could be me.
As someone who did not think it was worth the buy-in to lose, it's just not fun enough for me to lose like I do every year.
Yeah.
I did not make a bracket this year.
Well, in the MLB.com pool, we have like 80-something people, and I'm in third place. How about that?
Congratulations. Who do you have winning?
What?
Who do you have winning?
I have Kentucky winning.
Well, now I know who to root against.
Well, shame on you. But
speaking of ways of making a bracket.
Yeah, Mike, I want to ask you. You had our wonderful beat reporters ask the players how they like to fill out their brackets. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that stuck out in your mind as being particularly funny or smart or clever?
Well, a lot of players mostly are like, okay, well, where did I go to school? I'm going to move them forward even if I don't necessarily think that they are good at basketball, which is what I do every year when I make a bet. Because my school does not play at this level.
NYU doesn't play.
Their team is like F7. Like, that's the division. It's not even real. It's fantasy basketball only. Like, it's nothing. So I always put the two Michigan teams, or any Michigan teams, I move them way further along than they really should conceivably go. Which, this year, probably would have worked for me.
Because
as Dallas Keuchel predicted, Michigan is doing all right. They're moving along. He picked Michigan as his Cinderella school.
So your favorite was the player who picked your school.
Yes.
Well, your preferred.
Well, no. My favorite is Marlins player Miguel Rojas because, like I just said earlier, he makes his bracket based on spite. So he said that he decided to pick this. You know, it's sad for him, but he decided that he would pick Gonzaga to win because a couple of the coaches on the team just will not stop talking about UNC, and he's like, I don't care about them. I never want to hear anyone talk about them again.
So far, so good.
So I'm gonna pick Gonzaga because I want them to stop talking about this other school, and also because, like Venezuela, where he's from, it has a Z and an A in it. That's great.
Sure.
That's a great way to pick brackets because he doesn't care. And that's hilarious. If you want to pick a bracket, pick it based on what it's fun to root against.
Sure.
To upset your coaches.
Why not? That is as good a reason to pick as any.
All the other guys, really, like, they have all these strategies and they seem to be really working on breaking it down. But honestly, just go with your heart. Lonnie Chisenhall says that he mostly goes with his heart and that the brain is not a part of it.
Well, let me tell you.
If his heart is right, then it's right.
There is a lot of skill. As the resident bracketologist of Cut 4, obviously there's a lot of skill that goes into it, a lot of knowledge and genius. Claire, did anything stick out to you in Gemma's March Madness post?
Well, spite is probably the number one motivator for all people, for all decisions. So that was a great one. I do love that Jordy Mercer did, like, a little research. Like, he was, like, 40% of number one seeds. It was, like, he did research, but at the same time, it wasn't, like, all it was, like, reading, like, an infographic and being like, great, you know, I know that 27% of people brush their teeth at lunchtime. I'm going to use that information for my bracket. So I like that sort of, like, pseudo-scientific method where you're like, I'm going to go in, but not all in. Let's not get crazy.
Yeah. I agree with you that spite is a really good motivating factor in pretty much all aspects of life. But my favorite was the other way, because you said that a lot of players picked the school that they went to, even if they weren't very good. What I liked was Kyle Seager, who both picked the school that he went to, and they're very good. And he was very into UNC. In fact, he chose them as a Cinderella.
Which is...
He said, UNC. You asked, who's your Cinderella? His reply, UNC. They actually have a tough bracket with UCLA and Kentucky. It's going to be tough, but I just think Carolina is going to win. Keep in mind, they're the one seed.
Right, right, right. So definitely not a Cinderella.
Literally the
story.
Exact opposite of Cinderella.
So if Kyle Seeger was writing a remake of Cinderella, he would make the main characters the three evil stepsisters. And at the end, when they're like stuffing their feet in the shoes, his version would be like, that's perfect. You're my bride.
Yes, yes.
That was such a tortured metaphor, Claire.
He said there's a Cinderella.
Claire,
a Cinderella movie.
Claire, you violated the Geneva Convention. That was so bad.
Well, that's fair. I understand that bylaw is in there.
Yeah, but you should definitely go to mlb.com/cut4. You can read, we had like 30 players respond to this and give us their strategies for filling out the bracket. Read it now while you still are suffering that case of March Madness. But, Claire, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
We just talked to Gemma. Now it's time. It's just you and me. Gemma, will you leave?
Yeah,
it's
bye.
Okay, thank you.
I was going to do like full leave. Me walking away and closing the door.
On Friday, we celebrated St. Patrick's Day. I don't know that we did, but America did.
People did.
Countries, people did.
Yeah.
And as part of that, obviously, one of the grand traditions of St. Patrick's Day is wearing green. If you don't, people throw things at you. Clearly, I've celebrated St. Patrick's Day.
Do people throw things at you?
You've got a lot of mean people in your life.
People do that to me every day.
Supposed to pinch you?
I just assumed it was a St. Patrick's Day thing. but you know who doesn't have to worry about that is the Oakland Athletics, because they always wear green. They're the only baseball team to wear green regularly. So, Michael Clare, we dispatched you to go find out why. What was the result?
So it all comes down to that genius, visionary, crazy person, incredibly cheap owner, Charlie Finley. It's entirely his thing. There's a couple reasons, actually. He was really drawn to the colors. He would wear, you know, green jackets with yellow pants or yellow jackets with, like, a green shirt. There's some there's a great book by Jason Turbo, Dynastic, Fantastic, Bombastic, that has a lot of this information. It's also possible that he started this obsession with green and gold after seeing his wife dress up their young daughter in those two colors, and he was like, that's it, that's perfect, I want everything in that color. So he then had to go and petition baseball to let him dress the team in these colors, because under Rule 1.11, I believe, that was originally written in 1886 to make sure that when teams played each other, they didn't just show up in a, you know, like basically like a pickup softball game where half the team is in one color and everyone else is like, well, this is what I was wearing, this is what I'm playing in. He had to petition the league to be like, yes, you can wear colors at home and you can wear like a, you know, colored version of your jerseys on the road. Because before that, it was just white at home and gray on the road. And so he had to fight for that. When they first started, they were the Kansas City A's, and when he unveiled the uniforms, what he wanted to do was have the players in their old uniforms until about 15 minutes before the game, then have them go in, change, and come out and just have, like, the fans go crazy. It doesn't look like that happened, probably because the players were like, we're not getting dressed 15 minutes before the game. But he had sheep beyond the outfield fence dressed in green and gold. He had green and gold balloons soaring overhead that would then drop tickets and other prizes onto the fans. And then he had a fireworks show to unveil all of this. All because he's like, I think baseball needs to become more colorful. There's a quote basically that's like, cars used to just be black. Now there's green and gold and red and blue. And he's like, we need to bring that to baseball. So it's all thanks to Charlie Finley. And then obviously the 70s come because of Charlie Finley. More teams get bright colorful. Look at the Pirates, look at the Cardinals. And that's when Charlie Finley is like, we're going to go even more colorful. Our greens are going to be greener. Our golds are going to be brighter. Sadly, though, 1973 is the only year they ever wore a green jersey with green pants. And even then, it was like three or four times.
They should have done shorts. They should have gone full 70s. Pullover, shorts, everything green.
Well, you know, we all think about the White Sox as being the team to go with shorts.
Right.
It was actually the first person who ever pitched the idea of shorts. I don't know if it ever was actually used in the minors or not, but it was actually Branch Rickey who was the first one to say, like, I think players should be wearing shorts. So I don't know the specifics over where he was at the time and who, if anybody, actually wore them. But long before Bill Beck, it was Branch Rickey who was like, baseball players in shorts. Let everybody see those calves.
Is that what Branch Rickey was thinking? Do you really think that?
I mean,
that was his rationale. He's like,
Claire may have read into that.
Who doesn't want to see a good, well-shaped calf? I mean,
are you like a society woman in like 1790? That's so weird.
They're showing their wanton calf.
What a well-turned calf he has at the opera. Let him help me into my carriage.
It's funny you should say that, because one of the earliest articles about players wearing high socks talks about how much the women in the crowd were, like, fascinated and enjoyed seeing these sprightly legs. I think there's a post from, like, 2 years ago that has that quote in there, so search through the annals of Cut 4 history and you'll probably find it.
I have another question for you, Claire, which is that I think I just misheard you earlier, so I need you to clarify. Did you say Charlie Finley had green and gold sheets, like with the TS at the end, or sheep, like an animal in the outfield that chews on the grass?
Yes. So I think this was before they went to green and gold, is one of his, like, marketing ideas. This was when they were in Kansas City, so they had a lot of, like, farming day promotion.
Oh, my. So wait, they were actual sheep.
Actual sheep with a shepherd were in the outfield grass beyond the fence. And then when they switched to green and gold, I was unable to find any photos of this. I'm sure in some newspaper archive somewhere there has to be one. They were covered in green and gold. I don't know if it was like a saddle for a horse made for a sheep. I don't know if it was like a sash.
Well, people paint sheep wool.
It's so saddle for a sheep?
So they might have just painted the wool, as happens.
Okay, maybe it was that. I didn't know people painted sheep.
Well, you know, have you ever watched Great British Bake Off? Whatever. I don't care. But
they
show close-ups of sheep wandering around sometimes, and the sheep just have, like, random things painted on them.
So if you want to know one thing about Gemma, it's that she only watches one television show, and it's the Great British Bake Off.
I don't have a problem with that. I don't think anyone else would either.
Oh, wait. I didn't even hear you. I didn't hear Great British Bake Off. I heard something that sounded like I thought I heard the word prairie in there somewhere. Well, Great British Bake Off is fantastic.
We need to find the Oakland Athletics shepherd.
Yes!
We need to track that person down.
Yes!
And we need to get them to work for Cut 4.
We need to bring back sheep in the outfield.
Claire, if you were a team owner, because I know that you have a lot of opinions about team fashion.
I thought you were just going to say fantasies.
No, I don't need that. But if you were a team owner, what would be your first thing you did to the uniforms? Because you care about this, and I want to get you on the record here.
Well, listen, there are a lot of things. You know, I actually would want to bring back green. I'd go hot pink. I think that's one color we have yet to see in baseball. It's seen a little in soccer. I'd also chop the sleeves off, but rather than going the best look, we're going the Ted Kluszewski, if that's anywhere near how you pronounce it. Because these guys are also super muscular. Let the fans see those guns, those rippling biceps. Like, come on, they don't spend all winter, like, showing off their workouts on Instagram to then cover those up with sleeves. So hot pink, more green, crazier cleats, and let's get those sleeves cut off.
This sounds like, do you remember that show, Street Sharks? From the
what?
90s.
Are
what?
You making up TV show?
No. It's a show. It's like a cartoon from the 90s about, like, biker sharks. And they all wear ripped sleeves and really bright colors. And this sounds like what you are describing.
Are you talking about the SNL sketch Land Sharks?
No.
Wait.
It's like what you're describing just sounds like every cartoon that was made between, like, the years of 1988 and 1990.
Hey, look, Claire.
Like, you just want no sleeves, crazy colors. Like, I'm assuming some kind of graffiti paint tag on the back.
I think what Claire wants is the sleeves to be long sleeves, but really tight. And then they flex, and it rips, and then that's how they play baseball.
That's super 90s cartoon, okay?
Justin, I want every player in Justin Gore in the Gordon's uniform on the field.
You know, I knew this was going
to
come up.
That is something that happened today. We do need to talk about it, which is that Justin Bohr and D. Gordon switched uniforms, and D. Gordon is 170 pounds and, like, short, and Justin Bohr is, what, 265?
Yeah, and it looked like the Hulk moments before he hulked out.
Yeah. And D. Gordon just looked like me in my blankets in the morning.
Claire, what is your opinion on Justin Bohr and D. Gordon's uniform?
What shocked me was that he fit into it at all. When I saw the headline before I saw the photos, I was like, oh, what? Like, the shirt's going to, like, come up above his, like, navel, and, like, he's going to have to cut the sleeves to get his arms through it. But no, he got it on, and yes, it's extremely tight, but it's a good look. Like,
is it?
He owned it. The white pants are definitely stretched a little too tight, but you know, you take that in a little, you know, you give him a little more fabric there. I think he could get away with it day to day.
No, he looked like he was getting ready to be in ESPN The Body Issue. Like, it looked like they had painted it on him.
But not in a Giancarlo way.
Yeah.
You know what? I take it back. I don't want sleeveless uniforms. I want body paint uniforms.
Okay.
There we go.
You gave him that idea. And now we're stuck with it. That's what it is.
On that note, it is time to summarize the podcast in 140 characters. One tweet that accurately and adequately and in a G-rated fashion summarizes our podcast in a one bite-sized chunk. Claire, since you spent the last half hour objectifying all the players of MLB, I want you to go first. Give me your 140-character missive.
David Ross will win Dancing with the Stars in a body-painted Cubs uniform. Hashtag Charlie Finley also paints sheep.
Okay. Weird.
That's so weird.
Claire joined weird Twitter.
Yes, that's where Claire is now.
Gemma, give me your tweet. Lend me your tweets.
Okay, I have two tweets. Okay. But one is at Claire, and I'll do that one at the end.
Okay. So
my first tweet is just going to be, let whoever designed David Ross's rhinestone uniform design Team USA's next hashtag WBC uniform.
Okay, that's good.
Because then we can have, like, stars that actually sparkle on the uniform.
That would be great.
So I'm just going to reply to Claire's tweet that he tweeted earlier, and it's just going to say hashtag case of March Madness.
And, you know, I will reply to all of that with just delete your account. That is my tweet. But that is it for the Cut Forecast. If you have a tweet that more accurately and adequately summarizes our
especially
podcast,
because Dakota copped out,
tweet it at us at Cut For with the hashtag Cut Forecast. We'll retweet the best ones, mock the ones that are slightly less good, and I'll personally mute the ones that I think are terrible. You can go to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast and leave a rating or a review, 1 to 5 stars, to actually take the time to write the review. We love that. And make sure to tell all of your friends to listen to the Cut Forecast, because we would love to have them join us week in and week out. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, queries, complaints about Gemma, you can send them to cutforecast@mlb.com. Claire, thank you for joining us.
Oh, guys, thank you so much. You know, I'll get those sleeveless jerseys to you right away.
And Gemma, thank you as always for being here.
Of course.
But mostly thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.